This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and 50,000 retirees. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also now available as a podcast. Simply go to the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad or Android and search for DC 37 State of the Union. There are more ways than ever to stay in touch with us. You can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Check out the website always, www.dc37.net. And every month, keep a lookout for your union newspaper, the Public Employee Press, in your mailbox. Any comments about this show, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. Your feedback is always welcome. Tonight, we're welcoming back Danny Homan. He is the president of Iowa Council 61. We're going to talk about the fight against a law enacted this year by the Republican-dominated state government designed to destroy public sector unions. Good evening. Welcome back to the program, Danny.
Thank you, Chris. Glad to be back.
You actually, in the face of this law that, you know, sometimes we in New York, life is tough everywhere these days, but it's certainly no tougher than in the heartland of the country. Let's talk a little bit about the law that was passed and how you guys fought back recently against it.
Well, basically, Chris, what the law did is it took away all of our rights. First, it created two classes of folks in the public sector, one that they called public safety, one that they called non-public safety. The public safety folks were not affected much. They lost the ability to collect dues. The non-public safety folks lost their ability to bargain over everything other than base wages. And then base wages, if you went to arbitration, if you couldn't get a voluntary settlement and had to go to an arbitrator, the arbitrator's ability to issue an award was limited to the Midwest CPI or 3%, whichever is lower. So basically they gutted and took away from approximately 180,000 public sector employees in Iowa the ability to sit down at a table and bargain a contract, to bargain over health insurance, layoffs, seniority, a whole list of things. We no longer get to bargain over those.
And now this idea that the uniforms and the civilian sectors were facing different consequences, is that part of some divide and conquer strategy, or what is that about?
Well, I think it's kind of similar to what Wisconsin did. They didn't want to attack certain elements in the public safety. So they defined public safety as all cops, all police officers,
right,
all firefighters, virtually every classification in the state patrol, and then one small AFSCME unit, wasn't even a unit, one small group of employees within AFSCME, who were the motor vehicle enforcement officers who are out enforcing traffic laws on trucks that run up and down Iowa's highways. So it's not even uniform. Correctional officers aren't part of public safety. Our law enforcement officers on our university campuses are not part of public safety. Sheriff deputies were also. But jailers aren't. So it's not even uniform. It doesn't even mean sworn. We have many officers that go through the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy that they did not put into the classification of public safety.
But now let's be clear. You mentioned, you brought up Wisconsin. This is what's happened in Iowa is an echo of what Governor Scott Walker, who was anathema to everyone in the labor movement, did to public sector employees back, I guess, in 2010, correct?
Well, that's correct. How some folks have described Iowa's law is Wisconsin on steroids.
And part of that, again, these laws are passed to hamper unions from effectively representing the membership. And part of making it more difficult for unions to do that is forcing them to what they call recertify every couple of years. And there was a, right? And And tell us about the recertification process and what happened, because this is the good, this is a very heartening news to everyone who's in the labor movement and working people everywhere.
Okay. Under this law, Chris, all bargaining units have to recertify 1 year prior to the date of their contract expiration. Now, what the Republicans said, the reason they passed this law is because a lot of these units were organized back in the 70s, so they felt it was important for people to have the opportunity to vote on whether or not they wanted to have their union. We had 42 units that we had to do recertification elections on this year, and those were done in October. Of those 42 units, we won 41 of them, and we did not have a single unit that came in less than 60% of folks voting yes. But these elections were stacked against us. If an employee chose not to vote, didn't vote at all, the state voted for them, and they voted for them in the manner of they were counted as a no vote. So this wasn't a simple election process like we're normally used to in this country, where 50% plus one wins the election. This had to be 50% plus one of everybody in that bargaining unit voting yes. It was a very steep mountain for us, and we were able to win 41 of 42, which I'm very happy, very proud of. It sent a message that members really do want to be represented by a union.
Hey, how stacked can the deck be when they tell you, no, it's not a contest between those among those who vote. So what you're saying is if 200 people are in a unit and 100 people show up to vote and it's 60-40 plus, they're counting the 100 people who did not vote as no votes, right? So that is
absolutely,
that is stacking the deck as much as can be stacked, in my opinion. And you guys still kick their butts.
There is nothing fair about these elections, Chris. You described it perfectly. In the one unit that we lost, it was a very small unit of four people. Two people voted yes. One person chose not to vote. The other person tried to abstain. He didn't want to vote yes. He didn't want to vote no, but he didn't want his vote counted as a no vote, and they still counted him as a no. That election ended up 2-2, and we lost. That's the only one we lost.
We're talking with Danny. We're talking with Danny Homan. He's the president of Iowa Council 61, and this idea of how you prevail when they rig the deck against you is as I say, a very inspiring story. What does it say to you that 41 out of 42 units voted to stay in the union despite the kneecapping of unions in Iowa?
I believe what it said to me and what I believe I said in the press is that it shows that people want to have a voice, even if that voice is trying to be muffled by the Iowa legislature. They want to have a voice in what happens on their workplace. We're asking for basic rights. Be able to sit down and talk to the employer about what kind of health care you're going to have and how much you're going to pay for it, about how you're going to be paid for overtime, how much vacation you get, how do you schedule that vacation off. And even though a lot of those things we no longer get to bargain over, people still came and said, we want the union here fighting for us. And I believe that message was loud and clear, not only sent by our union, but sent by our brothers and sisters in the Iowa State Education Association, who won 116 of 120 units. It clearly showed that folks wanted to have their union, and they want their contract. Because another quirk in this law is every one of those units that did not recertify, their contract, which doesn't expire till June 30th of next year, became null and void 10 days after the election, which we're reviewing opportunities to challenge under the law.
Now,
because we believe it's wrong.
Now, what did you have to do to reach the membership to get them to vote? I mean, what communications, what tactics, what strategies did you have to employ in order to reach out to the members?
Everything you can think of, Chris. We did very heavy social media. We did phone calls. We did meetings. We did face-to-face. We did home visits. We spent 4 months virtually every minute of every day that we didn't have to do some other required practice talking to people. We had the International Union came in and provided staff to us to help us in this. And affiliates from all across the country sent in staff and or volunteer member organizers to come in and work for 4, 6, 7 days. And we virtually went out and touched about 2,000 people, I think was the number, between 1,500 and 2,000. And we tried to have a face-to-face conversation with them about what was at stake. It was just kind of an extension of the Ask Me Strong program. And we've been working on it for 4 months. So it took a long time, and it took a lot of effort.
And it's a lesson for all unions. I mean, anyone who is not, anyone who is part of the leadership of a union in 2017, who is not actively engaged in strategies that make communication with members essential, is doomed to failure, right? I mean, we have to be talking to our members, we have to be listening to our members, and we have to be letting them know exactly what's going on. And that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. And Chris, I've been fortunate, and I've traveled. I've even spoke out in DC 37 to one of your locals out there.
You absolutely did. Yes.
And one of the things I'd say to folks is, we no longer can just sit back and say, okay, everybody wants to be part of the union, you know, and especially in fair share states. You know, you can't sit back and say, well, we don't care if you're a full member or not. We're going to collect our fee. We have to go out and talk to people. We have to get off our fannies and go talk to people, because what happened in Iowa can happen in New York. What happened in Iowa can happen in Minnesota. It can happen in any state in the nation if the Republicans take control. This is their game plan, to hurt and weaken unions. And the only way we can combat this is by getting off our rear ends and going out and talking and listening to our members. And that's the only piece of advice I can give to anybody. Talk to your members. Talk to your coworkers. There is a lot at stake here.
Danny Homan.
This is about life.
Danny Homan, the president of Iowa Council 61, also a member of the AFSCME Executive Board, an international vice president. Thanks again for coming on the show and talking to us about, and congratulations, heartfelt congratulations from all of us here in New York for the superb victory you had.
Chris, thank you. Willing to do it anytime, my friend.
We'll be back. Thank you.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. We'll be right back.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. Our next guest joining us by phone is a good friend of ours, New York City public advocate Letitia James. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, how are you, Chris? And hello, DC 37.
You haven't been on the show since you won. So I want to send a heartfelt congratulations on your resounding reelection.
I couldn't have done it without the members of DC 37, the hardworking men and women who make this city run.
And we now have challenges before us for the future.
Yes, we do.
For the next 4 years, it's a weird world we live in. The Daily News, I don't know if you saw this, but and again, to listeners, we record on Thursday and we air on Sundays. The Daily News today has gone a little ballistic on Donald Trump, declaring him to be a madman. The Daily News says he's mentally unwell, and the recent tweets and behavior show he's gone over the line. What are your thoughts?
It's clear provocation. It's clear provocation, and he's basically feeding red meat to his supporters, and he's just really dividing our country along racial and ethnic lines and religious lines, and there is something to be said about his mental fitness to serve as president of these United States, and so I'm disturbed by the content that he, you know, retweeted yesterday morning. It's not only horrific, but it was meant to incite hate and violence against the Muslim community, and that's why, you know, we decided to send a letter to the CEO of Twitter to say that it violated the bounds of decency, and he should agree to abide by the same rules. The president should agree to abide by the same rules as everyone else, and he should not provoke, incite, or offend. Not just offend, but basically incite violence in our country against a marginalized group. It's just really unacceptable, or hate against any particular group. We're seeing all of this. I mean, you know, we're all these acts against Muslim people and people of color and against women, and it's just really, really unconscionable. So these are really scary times, but I'm hopeful. I wake up every day hopeful.
And what are some of the...
So I think all of us should remain as the same.
And what are some of the challenges specifically that you feel we have to tackle in this city in the next 4 years?
So, you know, I'm concerned about this tax bill, which is hasn't been, you know, passed by the Senate. But unfortunately, if in fact this tax bill is passed and signed by the president of these United States, it's going to have a devastating impact on our budget in the city of New York and on New Yorkers as a whole, particularly if they remove assault, which is the state and local tax exemption. That's going to have a major impact on our tax bill. And so it's going to affect the middle class. It's going to affect homeowners. They're also going to try to, you know, repeal Obamacare, the health care coverage for millions and millions of Americans. There's also some initiatives in there which are going to impact student debt. So we've got a lot of challenges in our country right now, and I just think all of us need to be active. We need to be engaged. We need to be involved. All of my millennials out there, it's really critically important that they remain involved. This proposal to end net neutrality will have a major impact on their bottom line and their ability to conduct business and to be entrepreneurs. All of those who have private businesses, it's going to result in increased costs and limited content. And so it's really critically important that we all be engaged, but we all remain hopeful, and that we all stay together, and that we all form coalitions and alliances and recognize that we're all in this together.
Do you think, I wonder if you think that Trump is this clever. I mean, the tax bill was, when people look at it, when attention is on it, when media attention's on it, when people are talking about it on social media, people don't like it. So if he's tweeting craziness about whatever he's tweeting about, and as vile as those tweets are, it distracts the conversation. It moves the conversation.
But we can't be distracted. We've got to continue to keep our eye. We've got to multitask.
Right.
And keep our eye on the tax bill and what's happening in Congress and all the measures that are being proposed, including net neutrality, including the tax bill, including, you know, the gutting of certain agencies, including of, you know, cybersecurity, including trade. All of these issues and more we've got to continue to keep our eye on, as well as the United States Supreme Court, where certain cases will be decided, which obviously are going to have an impact on DC 37 and its membership, the ability to organize and to be part of the union as a whole. And at the same time, continue to rise up and resist, again, his temptation or his efforts to divide us by race and by ethnicity and by religion. I mean, this is nothing more than fodder for his nationalists and for the racists that continue to exist. What we have to be knowledgeable about and remember is that there are more of us than there are of them, and that they're a limited minority. We will not be divided, and in fact, the coalition will grow larger and larger and larger. We also, at the same time, have to attack voter suppression. We've got to continue to attack laws that suppress the right to vote. We've got to focus on redistricting. We've got to focus on turning red states into blue, purple states into blue, a real, real, real blue. So we've got a lot of work ahead of us, but thus far, we need to be reminded. We beat Trump once. Not once, but twice, but three times with regards to their Muslim ban. We beat him again when he wanted to demolish the Obamacare. We beat him at the ballot box in Virginia and in New Jersey. So we are winning. So everyone needs to be mindful of that. And also that there are checks and balances in place, and our system is working. And he is not all powerful. You've got a judiciary which continues to keep him in check, and we just have to contain him. And you've got Mueller, the special prosecutor, who is continuing to investigate his ties and his administration ties and his family's ties to Russia. So I wake up every day hopeful. I'm optimistically hopeful on the future of our country, and I know that the best is yet to come for all of us. And it's cyclical. We always go through these cycles. And so it's cyclical. We'll come back. We will definitely come back, and we're going to come back stronger and together and better.
Let's shift gears a little bit to New York, where real estate is always such a volatile issue. The Public Advocate's Office releases its annual landlord watch list, the list of the 100 worst landlords. You did so just a week or two ago.
Yeah.
And what are you trying to accomplish with this list? What does it mean to be on this list, to be compiling this list? Let's talk about it a little bit. What does it mean to be the most awful landlord in New York City?
So the objective of this list is obviously to shame landlords into doing the right thing. But the purpose of it is to maintain affordable housing for low, moderate, middle-income families, and particularly immigrants, and particularly in communities that are rapidly gentrifying in a really hot real estate market. And as you know, as I've said previously, oil is to Texas as real estate to New York. And it is the driving force in this city, but it undergirds our economy, which is why, you know, we're not suffering from economic collapse like so many other municipalities throughout our country. It's fire, finance, insurance, and real estate, which is what keeps our economy balanced. But at the same time, because it is so hot, and because of market forces, and because of international money and dark money, there is an incentive basically to displace long-term residents and basically get higher rents for individuals who are rapidly moving into our city, and for foreign nationalists who basically want to park their money in our real estate because it's a great investment.
Now, according to your list, the most awful landlord in 2017 is somebody named Jonathan Cohen of Silver Shore.
Jonathan Cohen from Silver Shore Properties. And what's interesting is I got a call yesterday from someone who represents Silver Shore Properties, and he tells me that as a result of our efforts, he's going to be cleaning up these violations. And a lot of them are located in Sunset Park, where you've got a large Latino community and immigrant population, where he has unfortunately manipulated not only not manipulated, but taken advantage of. And they indicated to me that he plans on correcting those violations. So we will see. We're going to continue to monitor Mr. Cohen, Jonathan Cohen, of Silver Shore Properties, and hopefully he'll be off the list next year. But the point is that housing is the most urgent crisis facing New Yorkers, and with spiraling rents and a shortage of affordable housing, we cannot afford to lose any low, moderate, or middle-income affordable housing that's on the market now. And we will do whatever we can at our disposal to maintain properties and to, at the same time, speaking of multitasking, building more affordable housing. But we also need, and everyone who is listening to you, needs to contact their state elected officials, primarily in the state Senate, and urge them to pass three bills, which will go a long way. One, repeal vacancy decontrol, and that's Senate 3482. We need to, again, repeal vacancy decontrol. Two, we need to make preferential rent permanent. That bill is S6527, again in the Senate, to stop landlords from hiking the rent hundreds of dollars when their tenant renews that lease. And three, we need to repeal the 20% vacancy bonus, which is S1592. Landlords should not be incentivized to push tenants out. Those three bills are in the state Senate, and everyone needs to contact a state senator from downstate, Democrat and Republican alike, and tell them to move those bills out of committee and onto the floor for passage. And that's why it's so important that we have democratically controlled state Senate. I'm hopeful that there is an agreement between the IDC and the Democratic senators to create a majority in the state Senate so that we can protect tenants in the city of New York. We can move these bills and other bills that unfortunately have been stymied in a state Senate, which is controlled by Republicans.
New York City public advocate Letitia James, always a pleasure. The time always goes by very quickly. I want to thank you for giving us your valuable time for a little bit on the show, and wishing you all the best. Again, congratulations on a decisive reelection victory.
Thank you, Chris. And again, I want to thank DC 37 and its members. I would not be in this position but for DC 37. I'm internally grateful and indebted to the members of DC 37 for all that they do running the city and making the city the shining example across this country. Thank you, DC 37. And let me give a shout out to Henry Garrido. Thank you for all that he does as well.
And happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
All right. Bye. All right. Before we go, a couple of announcements. To find out the latest issues impacting our union, attend an organizing department meeting at your job site. For dates and locations of DC 37 organizing department job site meetings, please call 212-815-1095. Also, please share the holiday spirit with those less fortunate members of our family and participate in DC 37's annual holiday drive sponsored by the Personal Services Unit and the Municipal Employees Legal Services. For more information, go to our website, www.dc37.net. I'm Chris Policano. Our engineer is Andrea Minocchio. The producer is Rudy Orozco. Until next time, ciao.